Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and... Oh, I just saw the international symbol for hit the vape. 1 minute.
Hi, I'm Violet. I have ADHD. My pronouns are she, her, and I think my favorite symbol... Let's give her a sec to breathe. You know, holding it in doesn't do anything, right?
I didn't. Keep going.
Sorry. You're making a really silly face, too. I was going to say, I think my favorite symbol design of all time is probably the biohazard symbol. It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And today, I want to talk about some interesting symbols that I really like. A lot of this is essentially just talking about semiotics, the science of signs and how we communicate with them. Part of this is also more specific in that I want to talk about internationally protected symbols because I think it's a really interesting topic. When you think of a health pack in a video game, what do you think of?
Red Cross.
See.
I know thanks to a couple of goofs. Because they did a thing on it that people aren't supposed to use the Red Cross symbol without consent and like not on the appropriate thing or anything closely coming to it.
Yeah, there's very, very specific guidelines under the Geneva Convention that dictate how you can use the Red Cross. But did you also know that there's also a Red Crescent and a Red Crystal that are under the same rules?
I knew about the Red Crescent. I didn't know about the Red Crystal.
The Red Crescent is probably my favorite of the three, even though it is a lot newer and less iconic, because the Red Cross symbol, that originates from Christianity. It also, in part, also the flag of Sweden was part of the inspiration there. A lot of interconnections. The Red Crescent was developed because some Muslim-based organizations objected to a cross being a symbol for humanitarian aid and protection and things like that. So that's when they adopted the Red Crescent to kind of add on to the possible options. So you have Red Cross and Red Crescent now. In, I believe, 2005, they added the Red Crystal because both the cross and the crescent have some sort of either national or religious affiliation. So the Red Crystal was adopted as something that is entirely agnostic from any religious or nationality. It's essentially what the Red Cross and Red Crescent meanings are supposed to be, but not based in any sort of religious or national iconography.
Oh, I hadn't seen it before and I looked it up. It really is just a red diamond shape.
Essentially, if you take a square and turn it 45 degrees, so like quarter turn, right? That's really all it is. And I like the simplicity of it. I don't know if it screams health, medical protection, that sort of thing, but that's why it's so important that we have these certain protected symbols. Because when I was looking into this and like why we have these protections, I had heard a lot when I was in the game design program in college that you couldn't use a bright red cross, especially on a white background, to indicate a health pack in your game. And it was bad practice to do so. And then later I was told it's not just bad practice, it's a violation of the Geneva Convention. And I was like, oh, definitely don't do that.
Yeah, then, I don't know if you've watched the YouTube video about specifically the Red Cross one. It's really good. A couple of goofs on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube went through it because their kiddo had, they found fabric that they were going to use to make something for their kiddo that was official, like Girl Scouts fabric that had the Red Cross flag on it, the Red Cross symbol on it, and one of the things. And someone commented to them, like, this violates the Geneva Convention. And of course, the two of them went, excuse me?
Yep.
And went into it and did a whole breakdown of when it's violating the Geneva Convention and the history of it on YouTube. I highly recommend.
Yeah. And so I honestly thought about doing an Info Dumpies just on that. But then when I went down my rabbit hole, I kind of spun off a little bit into some of the other protected symbols that have similar rules around them, and I found that they were really interesting. There's been a number of examples of this happening, in particular with video games. It seems to happen a lot, right? Because we're simulating something in a video game. We're simulating real life. And in the simulation, you want to indicate health. And I think on the surface, originally, I thought it seemed to be a bit silly, right? That we would take this symbol of health and say, no, you can only use it in this specific humanitarian context. You cannot use it in video games. And my initial thought was, well, it means health. That's a good thing, right? Not necessarily, because if you think about it a little bit further, you're kind of diluting the symbolism to say, this just means health. When I was looking into this, I found that it was pretty common for international humanitarian organizations, not just the Red Cross, to actively monitor video games and movies and things like that for the use of these symbols, because they're intended to signify very important things in real life. Originally, I had thought, as I mentioned before, that this, it was not really that big of a deal to use it in a game context because it still means health, right? In the actual context, it means more than that. It means protection. It means physical safety in the real world. Having done more research, I can understand why they don't want that message diluted.
Yeah.
It's in a similar fashion to how this is important to people in the real world, that they understand this symbol is important. It's kind of, you're putting it on a pedestal deliberately. That same thing doesn't necessarily apply to things like the radiation symbol and the biohazard symbol. Those are often used in...
your average person isn't going to, at some point in their lives, maybe need to turn to a truck or a car or something with that symbol.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Oftentimes you're avoiding those things. You understand that those are dangerous things, but the specific use case of the Red Cross, the Red Crescent, and in hopefully to be adopted more, the Red Crystal, that is, you need to go to that thing to get help in a dire situation. So I can understand why that's treated the way it is. And there's been several instances in real life, in popular games even, where things have had to be changed because developers either didn't know or the symbol they used was too similar. A few of the examples I have here are, there's a game called Prison Architect, which is kind of a fucked up concept for a game now that I think about it. But they actually used...
the name alone.
Yeah, it's a little weird. But yeah, they had a Red Cross on their ambulances and health packs, which was a no-go. And they actually got a formal notice from the British Red Cross, like a cease and desist letter from them. Which apparently, when I was looking into this, it doesn't always escalate to a formal cease and desist. Sometimes it's, they just have somebody call you and say, hey, I'm with this company. You can't do that. I'm with the Red Cross. You can't do that. That sort of thing. The same thing actually happened to a lesser degree with Halo. They actually moved their kind of originally iconic plus red plus medical crates to an H symbol in the same color. Among Us actually had the same issue, even though it's a really recent one. Among Us on the med bay floor in one of the levels, there was a huge Red Cross on the floor.
No.
Right. And it's like, I know as someone who has done game design, it's so easy to go, well, this is the symbol that I think of for this. And that's a good thing. But it's
but
so
tricky.
But you
don't need to dilute the meaning of it in this game.
Exactly. Exactly. Stardew Valley actually had the same thing. Originally outside the town doctor's clinic in Stardew Valley, it was a Red Cross. Doom also had the same health pack and stim pack issue. And Subnautica, a very, very recent game, also had the same issue on its first aid kit. So this is something that's still happening today, and these organizations are still reaching out. Even outside of video games, there was a pretty recent incident in 2007 where it was kind of a reverse situation where the American Red Cross was selling first aid kits with the Red Cross on them, which they're allowed to do, but it violated their own convention in the Geneva Convention, right? So Johnson & Johnson sued them in 2007, which was like so interesting. I wanted to look more into that. I don't have time for it in this episode, but it's something to look into. There was a whole lawsuit almost in reverse to say, hey, you can't use it wrong either, which I thought was like, that's pretty interesting. And I know ultimately Johnson & Johnson's goal was probably to be allowed to use it themselves.
Yeah.
Being Johnson & Johnson. But it kind of highlights just how fiercely protected, even in non-military spaces, that this is used. Because ultimately, the real meaning of the Red Cross in real life is if you are in a military situation, in a war zone, in
a natural, the one a natural disaster. Would run into, yeah, natural disaster is one we're probably more common with.
Exactly. If you are in one of those situations, if you have a Red Cross truck, if you have a Red Cross armband, you are somebody that is part of this organization specifically designated as a non-combatant or a rescuer. You are a designated person who is there to help and not involved in whatever conflict is going on. So if it is a war thing, the war part does not often come up as often, but the natural disaster part definitely does. So if you're in a natural disaster, look for a Red Cross, a Red Crescent, or a Red Crystal. That's the way to go.
Yeah. You know, we both grew up in the ass end of Tornado Alley, and there were a few times where I would see them driving around after really bad slew of tornadoes or thunderstorm. They come out to check on people.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's really interesting that they didn't just replace one symbol with another when they added the crystal. Because it's so iconic to have the Red Cross, even though its origins are religiously affiliated, and same with the Red Crescent, they're very adamant. This is not a religious statement, that the fact that we're using this, it's just to be more accommodating to people that are uncomfortable with the Red Cross symbol. They adopted all three symbols. So literally,
I saw that when I was looking at the crystal.
Yeah. Outside of the Red Flag headquarters, or Red Cross headquarters, there are all three flags with all three symbols being flown, which I think is really smart, because I can imagine the chaos that would ensue if they decommissioned the Red Cross symbol.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine. For that same reason, actually, there are, throughout fairly recent history, there have been requests by other countries to add additional symbols of a similar nature to the Red Cross, Red Crescent, etc. list, and they're almost always rejected for good reason.
Yeah, you can't have like bespoke one for every country.
That's the thing.
That it doesn't, and anyone, if there are too many of them, anyone could slap any old red symbol on a white background and go, "Hey, I'm safe." And someone could go, "Oh, maybe you're from a place where I don't recognize your Red Cross flag. That's fine."
Exactly. There's a lot of countries I saw, what is now modern day Thailand, back in the early 1900s, had a symbol that they requested be added, which was a red lion on a white background, because that has cultural significance to them. There was another country, I did not put in my notes which one, I apologize, but there's another country that requested a red flame on a white background, which to me seems counterintuitive, right?
That sounds like danger.
Exactly, right? And what I'm going to get to here in just a bit is just how counterintuitive some of these symbols can be. I also want to talk about some other kinds of symbols that are still internationally protected symbols, but aren't necessarily the very, very well-known Red Cross, Red Crescent, etc. Have you ever heard of the Banner of Peace?
I feel like I've heard that term, but it doesn't conjure up an image for me.
That makes a lot of sense, because the Banner of Peace has actually been superseded by a different symbol. And one thing I found in my research that was really interesting to me is how many of these symbols I didn't know. And granted, a lot of these...
Oh, Banner of Peace is a circle, and it's got a thick red outline, a white circle with a red outline, and it's got three red dots in the middle in a pyramid shape.
Yeah. It honestly reminds me of a Japanese symbol, but it was actually created in 1935 by a Russian artist, specifically as a designation to protect museums, universities, and historic sites during wartime. And as you mentioned, it's three red circles inside of a larger ring that represent art, science, and religion.
Oh, and those are the types of places that would have that flying.
Exactly. In 1954... this idea was gaining traction, but the logo was, people didn't recognize the logo as often. 1954, the Hague Convention, officially the Convention for the Protection of Cultural Property in the Event of Armed Conflict, which is much more of a mouthful. It was the first major international treaty that dedicated exclusively to safeguarding exactly what the Banner of Peace was intended to protect, which was cultural heritage sites during war and military occupation. This Hague Convention set up a really comprehensive legal framework to ensure that monuments, art, archaeological sites, which wasn't previously included, and archives, everything, really, really comprehensive, all of that was included. The Hague Convention in 1954 updated the movement that the Banner of Peace started by replacing the red circles with a more modern blue shield emblem, which essentially grants absolute military immunity to cultural sites. This shield emblem is very different. It's kind of odd, in my opinion, and I don't really like it. If you imagine a square, but the bottom is extended down into a triangle, so you have a five-sided shape. Like, imagine a child's drawing of a house, but upside down, that kind of shape. And then you have a blue square on the bottom part, and then a blue triangle on the top part, kind of like a pennant. It's a weird shape that it doesn't scream protection to me.
So what is, I was trying to look up this one. Does it have a different name?
It's just called the Blue Shield of, I think it's the Cultural Protection Shield is the technical name. It's not a very iconic logo, in my opinion, and I actually like the Banner of Peace better.
Oh, this is odd.
Yeah, right? It's just not...
It kind of looks like the bottom part of a necktie.
Right, yeah. Like if you took a tie, like a necktie, like a, and just like made a blue it and white really necktie. Wide.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the white triangles are part of it too. It's just odd. I'm not a fan. But this symbol is also internationally recognized. You'll often see it, especially overseas, not as much here in the US, but overseas.
I mean, we're essentially a 12-year-old country.
Yeah.
I know it's about to be the 250th in the grand scheme of things. We're
exactly.
We don't have preteens.
Exactly. We don't have like the pyramids.
We stole this place.
If you were to hypothetically, right, bomb the pyramids, if you were fucking crazy and wanted to do that for some reason, that would be a violation of the Hague Convention, because I guarantee you they are designated as an international cultural property. They probably have this symbol somewhere on site at the pyramids, I would guess.
It would be nice if I knew that the UN would do anything about that happening, as we've seen in recent years, yeah. But well, you better stop that.
I believe the symbol of the United Nations, in fact, is also an internationally protected symbol, ironically. In a lot of movies and historical video games, this is the kind of place where you would expect to see things like the Banner of Peace and the Blue Shield. So like Indiana Jones video game or movie, right? A lot of those archaeological sites in real life would potentially, or almost certainly, have the Banner of Peace or the Blue Shield of a cultural property, but they don't really show that because that would be a violation of the Hague Convention. So what they typically do is use a symbol that is more recognized, at least in the US, which is the dove carrying an olive branch. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you where that came from.
Bible.
It came from Bible. It came from the story, if I recall correctly, of Noah. When the flood was over, he sent out a dove to check and see if it was cool down on land.
And God said, we good. Thank you for saving the chihuahuas.
Yeah, here's some mean green in the form of an olive branch, my bro.
Yeah.
There's another symbol, though, that I was not even aware that this was a thing. But there is a internationally protected symbol for civil defense, which I think is really, really cool. So civilian disaster shelters, civilian defense against like armed conflict and things like that. So kind of like the Red Cross, but for civilians specifically. Cool. This is the civil defense sign. It is an orange, bright orange circle with a dark blue equilateral triangle in it. And it specifically has some designations in how it's written, how it should appear, and that the triangle should never touch the sides of the circle. So they've got some specifics there. It has to be very strictly displayed in order to be recognized by military forces on a battlefield or in a disaster situation by emergency responders. It is a really interesting symbol, and I'm surprised that prior to looking this up, I wasn't aware that it even existed. But I feel like we should know about this.
I feel like a country such as ours might not want to teach people about that.
What?
Yeah, I feel like that might be a deliberate omission from our education to understand what that is.
I actually looked into why this was not really taught. And the interesting thing that I found is it used to be taught more, particularly around the times of World Wars One and Two, is when we taught it. Yeah. Although we actually have a US-specific symbol that is more commonly taught and was more commonly taught at this point. But still, we rarely teach, even back then, we rarely taught the international civil defense sign. Our civil defense sign in the US is a blue circle, a dark blue circle, with a white triangle and bright red letters CD on them, which...
I've never seen that before in my fucking life.
If you look up a picture of an air raid shelter sign right now, I guarantee you it's probably smack in the middle of it. Yeah, you've probably seen the symbol, but it's so forgettable.
Yeah.
Fun fact time about me. I used to do freelance logo design, and I had a friend of mine who was a professional freelance logo designer. Like, that's what he did for a living, and he kind of tutored me a little bit on it. And one of the rules of logo design, especially in this sort of context, if you start putting letters in it, it just suddenly becomes much less memorable. And also, now you've isolated it to only specific understanders of that language. Which brings me to one of my next signs that is, I think, something that rarely comes into the context of any average person's life. But I feel like we should still know about this. This is the dangerous forces sign, which sounds so ominous.
It's the sign above my mom's house.
Probably, honestly.
Probably.
Yeah, because what the dangerous forces sign is it's again created by the Geneva Convention, same as the Red Cross and all of that. It is a highly specific doomsday warning symbol reserved strictly for three types of infrastructure: dams, dikes, and power stations. And I don't mean lesbians. I mean the kind of like banked slope that leads down.
The thing you gotta stick your finger in to save the Netherlands.
God, I wish. No. When I say dike, I mean D-I-K-E, which is the specific term for, well, for the viewers, they may not know, but it's a specific term for essentially a sloped section of land outside of a river designed to essentially hold the capacity of the river should it flood. If you attack or bomb any of these things, it could cause a massive disaster for the people in the surrounding areas, civilians in particular, especially the nuclear power station. So they will include a dangerous forces sign to say, listen, you can't bomb this. It's a violation of the Geneva Convention because you're not going to hit your intended target, whatever that is. You're going to get an untold amount of collateral damage of everyone in the nearby area because, you know, a dam breaking is a very bad thing for everyone in the nearby area. Same with a dike, right? Because you could just flood an entire nearby community if the dike is no longer functioning. But this symbol is something that I feel like we should know. It's kind of odd, though. It's another one that I feel like should probably be more interesting in some way. It's just three orange circles in a row.
Dragon balls?
Kinda. Yeah, they're kind of Dragon Ball colored. But it's literally just orange circle, orange circle, orange circle. I feel like it should be more like...
dramatic.
Dramatic. Right. There's no drama. It's like it's an ellipses. Why is it orange even? Like, I get that it needs to be a bright color, sure, but I don't know. It just seems so like random and like nondescript. We're going to get into some symbols here in just a bit, though, that are both random and nondescript, but in a good way. There's a couple other things that I want to mention that are internationally protected symbols in less of a direct symbol sense, like not an icon, but still internationally protected things. The Geneva Convention also states that military hospital ships are legally required to be painted entirely white on their exterior surfaces and feature giant dark red crosses painted on both sides of the hull and all horizontal structures for clear aerial viewing, which is why you almost never will see a ship painted white, because that's already too close. This is something else that I found that was really interesting, which is that the Geneva Convention also establishes that medical helicopters and aircraft can use high-intensity flashing blue light signals to identify themselves electronically to combat pilots and anti-aircraft radar systems. And abusing that, yeah, that's another way that if you were to abuse that, you'd be in violation of the Geneva Convention. Though most of us are not out here flying helicopters and aircraft. One thing that, of course, comes to mind with all of this is the plain white flag. Again, using a plain white flag is technically a violation of the Geneva Convention, although less directly so than the Red Cross is, because it's literally just a single color. But it still is supposed to designate a negotiator or an envoy who is immune to military attack while attempting to arrange a parley or surrender. But it's still essentially defined under the same thing as the Red Cross, which I thought was interesting. The next section that I want to talk about is things that are not necessarily protected symbols, but they are culturally agnostic symbols that are recognized everywhere, and in some cases, attempts at that that were failures in kind of a hilarious way. When you think of danger in general, what's the first thing you think about?
Austin, danger powers.
That makes a lot of sense. When you think about the word danger, specifically, if you were going to try to tell somebody danger, but you only could send them one symbol, what would you send them?
knife emoji?
Honestly, that's not bad.
I don't know. Knife emoji?
Typically, most people, I would say, and according to some surveys I found, most people answer a skull and crossbones.
Well, that's poison.
Exactly. So here, that's the thing, is originally it was used to mean just danger, not poison. And then it was eventually adopted in the 19th century as the specific international hazard symbol for chemical poisons. But we also have pirates in our culture.
Yeah.
So this is where we run into Mr. Yuck.
My father. There is
your father, Mr. Yuck. So there's a number of safety advocates in the U.S. back in the early 2000s that said, hey, we think kids are going to confuse the skull and crossbones that's on the bottle of muriatic acid in your basement with pirate juice because it's got a skull and crossbones on it. Which is, I think, a valid concern to a degree, but I also don't know how to avoid it because the skull and crossbones is also a very good symbol for death.
Yeah.
So these safety advocates suggested that we replace the skull and crossbones with a frowning green cartoon face going, ugh, with its tongue out.
That's far less powerful.
Named Mr. Yuck.
Oh.
Yeah, that's Mr. Yuck. It's someone, it's a bright green, like neon green face, just going, ugh. They're like frowning, they're sticking their tongue out, and they're squinting their eyes with like angry brows. And the reason that they suggested Mr. Yuck was because at the time, research suggested that young children were actually associating the traditional skull with exciting pirate stories rather than household toxins and poison.
Oh, I like Mr. Yuck.
I like Mr. Yuck, honestly. I kind of want a Mr. Yuck, like, sticker or something.
Yeah, Mr. Like, Yuck is good.
Maybe we need to bring back Mr. Yuck.
And it's just Y-U-K.
Yeah, Yuck. Exactly. It's not Y-U-C-K. Honestly, I like Mr. Yuck, but I don't think it's necessarily effective at indicating poison.
Oh, and you might get to this, but there's another one called Mr. Ouch.
I didn't find that, actually.
I'm going to say
there's Mr. Ouch.
Mr. Ouch is a ball of electricity making a sinister face zapping the silhouette of a person.
Oh, I don't know how I didn't find Mr. Ouch, but I also like Mr. Ouch.
Yeah, it's just all black and there's a silhouette of this electrical ball with sinister eyes and a frown. And one of the little lightning bolt arms is zapping the silhouette of a person who's like, ah, and is like zapped and falling.
I'm really surprised I didn't find that. Thank you for sending that. But that is,
yeah,
that's good. I like Mr.
Yeah,
Ouch.
I scrolled to the end of the wiki for Mr. Yuck and it said Mr. Ouch. And I was like, well, who's this guy?
See, for me, I like the idea of personifying dangers to a degree. I think it makes them more memorable, at least for me. But granted, take this with a grain of salt. I'm also the person that cries when I hear the Smokey the Bear theme song.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we get into one of the symbols that is still, it is an internationally recognized symbol, not a protected symbol, but yet again, it is an internationally known symbol, an internationally used symbol, and my personal favorite, the biohazard symbol. The biohazard symbol, A, is really fucking cool. Mm-hmm. B, it's very recognizable and iconic, but here's the downside. It is often confused with a symbol for radiation, which is the radiation symbol is a whole other section I'm going to get to here in just a minute. But the biohazard symbol was developed in 1966 by environmental health engineer Charles L. Baldwin and his team at the Dow Chemical Company. They also had some help from the NIH at the time, but
Dow Chemical is responsible for so much fucked up shit, so of much course. Fucked up shit. But yeah, one of my peeves is when there's something that does have like a nuclear power plant on TV or movies, and I can see like this is a long annoyance of mine that someone on set design used the biohazard symbol instead of
I know that I see that all the time and it drives me nuts.
Yeah,
I have an injectable medication that I take, and I thought for a moment to draw a warning symbol on it. And I was like, well, I'm certainly not going to draw the biohazard symbol by hand. That's hard to draw. That's one of the flaws with it, by the way, is it's kind of hard to draw correctly. Although it's easy to draw it in a way that's recognizable. If I wanted it to look nice, which I did, I would have to like print something out. Anyway, I'm getting on a tangent. But at first I went and started drawing what I thought was the biohazard symbol in my head, and I did it. I started drawing the radiation symbol, and I'm like, no, these are not radioactive needles. What am I doing, Violet?
Maybe.
So, well, maybe, unless if I get bitten by that one spider and turn into a Spider Woman, we'll see.
I won't get into why that's not how that works. That's for a different episode, but continue.
Well, yeah, I'm not very well-versed in comics, and I'm so sorry. First off, what you mentioned was correct. The Dow Chemical Company has done so much fucked up shit. Dow Chemical Company was working with the NIH, and the mandate essentially from the NIH said, you can make this symbol, but it must be, quote, memorable but meaningless. It cannot carry any pre-existing cultural associations before being assigned to dangerous pathogens, which is valid. They did so much testing with this. It's really interesting. They did an entire study where they had 80 different symbols that were originally proposed, and of those 80, they narrowed it down to 12 that were just the most immediately, this makes sense, this seems like the right thing, potentially. And they put together a study where they showed people a series of images, right? A series of symbols. So they showed them a skull and crossbones, a railroad crossing symbol, a potential biohazard symbol, the and sign, the Chevy logo, a Triforce symbol, the fleur-de-lis, the prescription symbol, the Olympic rings, a series of stuff back to back. But interspersed was the proposed logos. And then they would hand these people a sheet of paper and say, circle the ones that you remember seeing. They took the ones that people consistently remembered seeing to try and get the most memorable one. There were some pretty top contenders that didn't get picked, and I'm glad they didn't. There was one failed prototype symbol that featured a stylized molecular chain, but they had some focus groups, and it was ultimately rejected because it looked too technical and scientific, which is, I think, valid. You're trying to appeal to literally everyone who could possibly see this symbol. There was another design which featured a symmetrical multi-pointed star. But if you think about it for a moment,
there are too many religions that have symmetrical multi-pointed stars in their iconography.
Exactly. And there's also a lot of like occult symbolism that use multi-pointed star. And also, apparently, in the study they did, people were confusing it, A, with occult iconography, but also with snowflakes.
Yeah.
Which I think is valid. And in some cases, commercial pharmacy logos, because apparently there was a pharmacy at the time that had a pointy star-like logo.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was I don't know what the pharmacy is. In, God, what tiny Texas town am I thinking of? I have a recollection of a very small town back in Texas that the pharmacy building still had that star on it.
I know what you're talking about. I cannot remember the name of that pharmacy for the life of me, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The interlocking three-ring trefoil is what won the selection process because it could be recognized easily from any angle, and it doesn't carry any prior cultural associations. It is literally just a circle with three circles layered on top of it, a small circle in the very middle of those three big circles, and then you narrow the outer circles to points that are disconnected from one another. It's not anything. It's nothing, but when you look at it, it looks dangerous. It's pointy, right? Yeah. It looks sharp. It looks pointy. It looks unsafe. And also, they dictated the color that it has to be in, which is always in red. Although nowadays, in some cases, it's in white on red, but red generally has to be involved in some way. So as I mentioned earlier, this symbol, although it is a trefoil, a lot of trefoil symbols are often kind of interspersed or not interspersed, confused with one another, because they all originate from that same three circles connected shape. The radiation symbol is very similar, except they exchanged, it still has that central circle, but instead of having overlapping circles, they basically took the other circles and made them like segments of a circle. And I'm sure you're all familiar with the radiation symbol.
It's a Y shape.
It's a Y shape.
It's got a circle, and then it's got these little almost like pie slices that make up a Y shape around it, kind of these fan shapes.
It's a three-bladed trefoil is how it's described.
It looks like a fan. With three blades.
Yeah. Exactly. It was originally developed at UC Berkeley in their lab in 1946 to represent energy radiating from an atom, which makes a lot of sense to me. And they've done it in a way that I think is very simple. One thing that I think is really interesting, though, originally, the very first rendition of this was a magenta trefoil on a dark blue background.
That doesn't sound like safe signage.
It doesn't, right? Because you rarely ever see blue in something unsafe.
Yeah.
So it was very quickly changed to be magenta on yellow, which is also just, it's kind of a cool, like, X-Men-esque.
I'm looking it up. It's rough to look at, and that color combo makes it look like a dinky little angel Christmas ornament when it's in that magenta color.
It's kind of giving like 90s X-Men a little bit, though, in a way. I like it, but also it does kind of look toy-like in a way as well. Nowadays, the ISO, the International Standard for Organization, or for the International Standards Organization, has updated the symbol to be high contrast black and yellow. So yellow symbol, black background, easy. Another internationally recognized symbol that I'm sure we've all seen is the running man exit sign. So literally a rectangle with a dude running through it to mean exit. You've seen this, right?
Oh, yeah.
This was created, and like a lot of these signs, by the way, this was created after an accident happened wherein someone could not understand that a sign meant danger or go this way in case of danger. In 1979, there was a tragic hotel fire where a number of people died because they did not understand the signs that said exit in English meant exit. They didn't speak English, but the sign just said exit.
Oh, God. And
it's just a red sign that said something in English and they didn't know what it meant. And if you are very new to a place like the US, right, where we still have exit signs that are literally just the word exit, if you don't speak English, you don't know what that means necessarily. And you can maybe infer, but not necessarily. Yeah. So Yukio Ota in 1979, who's a Japanese graphic designer, created the running man exit sign to replace those. It really proved that linguistic signs fail completely during chaotic evacuations. Yeah. You just can't rely on text in those sorts of situations. It has to be an icon, a symbol. When I was doing research on this, another internationally known sign that I did not realize had like standards and some sort of regulation to a degree was the no symbol. the do not do this symbol.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it's used in the Ghostbusters logo. I believe the technical name is the international prohibitory sign, which feels really weird, but it's the no sign. It's a red circle with a cross through it, a red cross through it. Mm-hmm. One thing that I found interesting is that in the U.S., if you are going to say put a no sign on something, the ISO, the International Organization for Standardization, says that the cross must start in the upper left and then go to the bottom right, not the other way around, not any other angle. And the red area of the no has to take up at least 35% of the total area of the sign.
Whoa.
Which I think is like, it's interesting that they're designating how much of the sign has to contain the no. Because like, if you're trying to comply with some sort of regulation or standard, but you know, maybe you're a shady person, you're trying to get away with something, you could put a really tiny warning sign, right? And if somebody gets hurt, you say, oh, well, look, I had a tiny warning. Not in this case. It's so interesting too, because there's been a number of times where for various reasons, I've had to put like a no symbol on something. And there's always the moment where I go, which way should the slash be?
Yeah.
And I always end up on top left to bottom right. And I think it has to do with how we process information as English speakers, reading from top left to bottom right. Because it just doesn't look right the other way around.
Yeah.
The next thing I want to talk about is something that you've almost certainly heard of. I think we've talked about this before. But in the 1990s, the U.S. government assembled a team of linguists, anthropologists, and sci-fi writers to design symbols for nuclear waste sites meant to warn humans 10,000 years in the future. And essentially, what they were trying to get at was, in 10,000 years, who knows how language will have evolved, how symbols will have evolved, how do we indicate danger in a totally unambiguous way, no matter how far in the future people will understand that this is not a safe place, because nuclear waste is not safe forever, right? For like the duration of human lifetime, it's never safe. So how do we like keep people knowing that, assuming that we can't just maintain the infrastructure well enough? Some people have said that this study was kind of a waste of time, and that, you know, society is not going to fail to such a degree that we won't understand that these places.
Okay,
it totally will.
Yeah.
Like, sure, I've seen
Jan.
Pictures.
Optimistic.
Yeah. I also thought that that was a pretty odd take.
It's a bold assumption.
Yeah. Especially when I've seen recent pictures of people playing around on nuclear stuff in Chernobyl. Like,
yeah.
And I don't think it's not worthwhile. I think it's very difficult. I don't think we settled on anything functional.
Well, I also think this is reflective of people saying, well, if it happens that far in the future, why do I give a shit about who runs into it?
Right.
Exactly. I think that's more to the point. So many people don't care about what happens to people who are around long after they're dead.
Right.
That's why we're in a climate crisis.
Exactly. So I think it is, yes, important to talk about this, but it's very difficult.
Yeah.
The designs that we ended up settling on were icons of screaming faces and symbols like the skull and crossbones, even though that is something that might mean something entirely different or even positive in the future, like our connotation with pirates. It's still something that, at least for a long time, has understood to mean danger. One of the more popular and well-known ones was the field of spikes. So rather than having a sign, you literally just fill the area with giant metal spikes to say, hey, this place is bad. Make it look bad and scary. Which I'm like, honestly, that's probably the best way to go.
I'm thinking if I were someplace and I saw that field is full of spikes, my first thought would be, I don't need to go there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something primal about spikes.
I like how a lot of this comes back to Kiki and Boba.
It really does. It really, really does come back to Kiki and Boba. And I'm actually going to mention on something very similar to Kiki and Boba here in just a second. One thing I want to talk about also is there was, for a while, a new radiation symbol that was developed in 2007. And it became, like, it was established as the standard radiation symbol for, like, a minute. But then it was immediately rescinded because it sucked. And what this is it's a red triangle. At the top, there's the standard radiation symbol. There's squiggly lines coming downwards off
of it. I saw this when I was looking at it. The skull and crossbones.
on the left, there's a skull and crossbones, and then there's like the exit sign dude and an arrow on the right. First off, it's visually cluttered.
It's
got three different symbols within the
symbol. Yeah, which have their own singular connotations. Exactly. And then also, the point is to tell people what is present at this place, not to offer them full instructions for this is what you should do with this information, and if you don't, you will die.
Exactly. The number one issue that they saw with this in focus groups was that the people thought that the running figure with an arrow to the right meant run this way for shelter, which not necessarily true, because that symbol often means go this way for something. So I honestly don't know how this even passed even a basic examination. The last thing that I want to talk about here is a really interesting set of symbols. And these are the symbols that we see every single day. And these are internationally used symbols, although there's variation in region on how they're used. Shout out to the GeoGuessr players out there who are already aware of this. I want to talk about ISO 7010. Which is the set of symbols that are used in daily life to denote everything. Stop signs are listed in here. Flood warnings, bridge may ice over signs. Literally every street sign you can imagine, or like public warning sign, it's probably listed in ISO 7010 somewhere. If you need the official 2019 modern list of these symbols for some compliance reason, it's $283.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But you can also go to Wikipedia for a not the latest non-compliant version. So if you have some sort of business reason that you need the latest ISO safety sign standards, prepare to shell out for it. But if you want to look, they're on Wikipedia, and the link will be in my notes. I found this really, really interesting study about what makes a symbol memorable.
Titties.
God, I wish.
That's why I always remember that drawing of the Jersey Devil on the X-Files that Mulder did. She got boobies.
Unfortunately, based on the results of the study, boobies are not very memorable as far as symbols go.
Okay, speak for yourselves, focus group.
Yeah, right. I know. I'm saying. I'm just a humble lesbian here, but I do think boobs are pretty great and memorable. This was really a set of two experiments. The first experiment took 248 people, and they had them do a memory test featuring 80 of the most common conventional symbols, followed by an exercise where they sorted the symbols based on visual or conceptual similarities. So they were sorting them based on like how similar the two symbols are one by one. The researchers used some computer vision software and a statistical technique called principal component analysis to sort the data and identify three specific visual features that predict how well a symbol is remembered. And those three things are thinness, pointiness, and left-right asymmetry.
Well, that's not what I would have expected.
Me neither. I would have thought almost the opposite, honestly. I like in a logo thick, bold lines. Somehow, those seem to make logos and symbols less memorable. And in order to reduce bias, and this is the only part that I don't like, they used AI to randomly generate symbols associated with certain meanings. Nonetheless, they generated a new set of symbols and did a new experiment where they said, all right, here's a concept like forward. Or baking, I don't know. There's a whole list of the different concepts, but essentially it's concepts that don't already have a symbol. And they told this AI system, they said, all right, generate a pointy asymmetrical logo with thin lines that represents this concept. And then they said the same thing, but a thick line symbol that's not pointy, that's very round, and is symmetrical. And they found that over the course of the study, 21% more of the pointy, asymmetrical, thin line symbols were successfully recallable with the abstract word. So the association with the word that they were generated with was stronger in the pointy, thin lined, asymmetrical logos.
I wonder if it's because it sticks out from what graphic designers making signs for things that are not for like international safety use would follow. Because usually when you're doing art and stuff and you want a memorable logo, a lot of the time it's bold, symmetrical. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One thing that was really interesting too is that they did not find any correlation in distinctiveness in the logo and how well it is memorized. And when I say distinctiveness, I mean literally just how much it stands out amongst the others, how different it is from the others. It did not seem to matter in terms of the memorability nearly as much, or at all, really, in terms of the thinness of the lines or thickness of the lines, whether or not it was symmetrical and whether or not it was pointy. The theory in the paper that I found, these traits are more memorable to humans due to processing efficiency, meaning that they are fundamentally easier and faster for the human visual system to process. So not necessarily a mental thing, but literally just a visual processing thing. We're faster at processing these things. They described it as a mental smoothness or metacognitive fluency, which biases the brain to find the symbol more representative and anchors it deeper into long-term memory. I find it really interesting that there's so many different ways to do these symbols. Ironically, the biohazard symbol, while it does have curved lines and it is symmetrical, it's very pointy.
Yeah.
And a lot of the most memorable symbols in terms of what I associate with what have straight lines and points to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's my info dump about international signage.
I'm going to go make a dangerous forces sign to hang above the toilet.
Hell yeah. Oh my god, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Easy yeah, enough.
Let's go violate the Geneva Convention.
Yes. I love you. Let's go violate the Geneva Convention together. Hey friends, I'm here with the housekeeping section. First, I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, like Heather Watts, Nana Nussbaum, Jennifer Bosch, Patch, Harleen, Bethany, Laura Kramer, Lilith Rain, Janice Weston, Anarchista, Percy, Nanya B, Kate Michigoose, K Genius, Dave Perrell, Megan E, Carl Brooks, Natasha Neves, Gus, Lutzi, Helen Clifford, Sewing Seraph, Rachel Rachelson, and Fintago. If you want to support the show, I have some ways you can help us out. The first is simply to tell other people about InfoDumpies. If you know someone you think would like InfoDumpies, you work with them, you go to school with them, you are on a Discord server with them, whoever you think might like InfoDumpies, if you can share it with them, that does it. That does us a world of good. We don't take paid ads. We don't pay for advertising. We grow entirely by word of mouth, and you folks do that for us. So the more people you can tell about our shows, the better. Additionally, you can support us by subscribing, liking, leaving a rating, a review, whatever interactions your podcatcher of choice supports for interacting with the podcasts you enjoy. Doing the nice ones for us helps us out a lot. It gets us more action in the algorithms, and it gets us more likely to be recommended to people who like similar shows to InfoDumpies. So you help us get found by people in the respective apps when you do this and help us get recommended to more people. If you're in a place to help us out monetarily, you can go to the show details where you'll find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page. There, you will get bonus material for stuff we do for InfoDumpies, stuff we did for today's lucky winner, like all that fucking music, including the musical episode, is up there for certain tiers. Murphy Bay Magic, we have an upcoming show that I'm starting the sound design on. There's lots of stuff. We're just going to keep putting all of our Mixnomer stuff there. So for InfoDumpies, you have all of mine and Violet's notes for the episodes we do with links to our sources. You can go take a deeper dive. If you want to go learn more about a thing we were talking about in an episode and you want to go learn more than we can contain in about an hour. So yeah, our Patreon starts at $1. You can help support us and help us keep making more weird shit you enjoy. Also, if you'd like to hang out with us, you can find a link to the Discord server in the show details. I love the Discord server. We're going to be doing a stream as of the time that I'm recording this, this upcoming Saturday, for Dinosaur with Double D's, which is a very strange dating game where you're a giant dinosaur lady with big titties, and you're trying to find love without anyone realizing you're a dinosaur, which is quite obvious. But we're going to be streaming that again. We stream games, we hang out, we do Stitch and Bitch. It's really just the most supportive community that I love. And if you want to come hang out with us, that's the place to do it. Also, I don't plug it very often, but in the show details, you'll find a link to BalanaArts.com, which is our merch hub where we have merch from today's lucky winner. We have Info Dumpy stickers. We have other stickers we've made. It's a place where you can buy merch. So if you want to support us, but you're like, I don't know if I can do something monthly like Patreon, buying merch is a great way to do that. So we have some really fun stickers up there. If you like today's lucky winner, I think my favorite sticker offering we have is a South Dallas Phallus Palace logo for the fake sex shop I made up for today's lucky winner that Violet so cleverly designed. But yeah, that's all I've got for you this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.